This is Audible Bleeding, the Vascular Surgery Podcast. We're here to help you keep your finger on the pulse.
Dr. Max Wolauer is an assistant of surgery at the University of Colorado School of Medicine in Aurora, Colorado. He went to medical school at Albany Medical College and completed his general surgery residency at the University of Colorado and fellowship at Cleveland Clinic. We also have Dr. Robert Cuff with us. He is an assistant professor and program director for the Integrated Vascular Surgery Residency and Fellowship at Michigan State University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He went to medical school at Michigan State University, completed his general surgery residency at Gunderson Lutheran Medical Foundation and fellowship at the University of Kansas Medical Center. They are both very involved with collaboratives across academic vascular surgery, developing patient registries and innovating in outcomes and health services research. So thanks, Dr. Wolauer and Dr. Cuff, for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is designed as a retrospectively collected prospective international vascular surgery registry. But in your own words, we just wanted you to describe, you know, what the purpose of this study is.
The study is to hopefully evaluate the impact that the COVID-19 pandemic has had on vascular surgeons, their practices, and the care of their patients throughout the world. As this has spread from Asia through Europe, we've seen significant impact, obviously, on hospitals and all patients, but we are wanting to know what our impact is on the vascular patients and practices.
Right. So this is an idea that just about every vascular surgeon and trainee is thinking about. The COVID pandemic just put the whole vascular world on its head. And we went from running busy clinical practices to having to cancel and postpone elective surgeries and move to only performing emergency surgeries. And we know that there's going to be a consequence of this. And we want to establish a way to evaluate what those effects are of this drastic and rapid change to our practice as a result of the COVID pandemic.
So how was this study developed and who's been a part of this development team so far to this point?
The idea was developed across, I think, individual surgeons all over the world have had the same thought as to how are we going to follow these patients and assess them. The idea for VASC came out of conversations through the WhatsApp chat group that Max had started, which led to a lot of exchange of ideas, and it became clear that everyone kind of had these same thoughts and were exchanging ideas about what was going to happen, that we decided to branch out and create a formal registry so that we can more accurately assess the impact.
We saw the strength of all the vascular surgeons coming together on a national and international level. The fact that we were standing together through these unsettled times and just the sheer value of that free exchange of information. And we knew that the bigger the participation across the world in our registry, the better equipped we'll be able to answer these important questions. We're collaborating with the Vascular Low Frequency Disease Consortium out of UCLA that Peter Lawrence started about 20 years ago, and Dr. Wu is now associate director. And over the last 20 years, they've studied really important work to answer really important questions about patients with vascular disease. And these are things that are not easily picked up in something like VQI. And they've established a really effective framework for building a registry and performing this type of research. So even though COVID-19 is not a low frequency disease per se, the model that they've established and that they're allowing us to use as a template is, I mean, it's top notch. It's really an exceptional model that they've put forth. And being able to partner with them has been a crucial and really a unique part of our collaborative.
We'll put a link to that collaborative so that people can look over what they've set up and see that as a template.
Yeah, so let's dive a little bit into the nuts and bolts of this. Who are the patients you're looking for exactly? What are some of the inclusion and exclusion criteria when you're screening these patients for participation?
The effect of COVID-19 on patients with vascular disease is really a far-reaching question that we're answering. So we're asking that question for patients who had an elective surgery scheduled. It also applies to patients undergoing vascular surgery who are inpatients that had to be postponed because of the pandemic, to account for the surge in COVID patients in the hospital and to preserve PPE. Another link to talk about of patients we're going to study are the dialysis access. I think it's a huge and really important topic. Delaying or postponing vascular access in and of itself really highlights the interface of all the issues that we're dealing with. So on one hand, we have patients where you could consider this an elective surgery, placement of dialysis access, and these cases are being postponed. On another end, we know fistula first. We've been practicing that for a long time. There are implications of PPE and resource utilization doing cases like these. There are also implications of if a patient with end-stage renal disease gets COVID, they could decimate an entire dialysis center. And so the dialysis population is going to be critical. That study is going to be a critical component of our registry and our collaborative moving forward. Just wanted to highlight that too. And so there's really a broad reach to the scope of the question.
Dr. Cuff, do you have anything else to add?
Surgeons that are interested should keep track of their cases for the portion of the registry that we're looking at the effects of cancellations and so forth on. And then at their local site or practice, keep track of any significant COVID conditions that they deal with. Because part of it is we don't know exactly what the full effects of COVID on vascular disease as far as the hypercoagulability and effects on arterial embolism and so forth.
The hypercoagulable phenotype, I think, is a really important subgroup of patients. So vascular surgeons are perfectly equipped to understand and manage patients with hypercoagulable manifestations of COVID that we're seeing. We're often involved to manage the surgical complications, and we also are very well equipped and often help managing the medical complications. And so we have a vantage point to help answer this question that's really intriguing the worldwide community is what is going on with patients with COVID who manifest with this hypercoagulable phenotype that progresses to a DIC-like picture? Does it have to do with a different pathogenicity? What exactly is going on with this? And I think that's an important part for us to keep track of as these patients enter the picture.
So right now, we'd like to encourage people to just keep track of those patients once the IRBs are approved and the REDCap registry is ready for data input, then they'll be able to circle back and start entering that data worldwide.
Okay, so just to kind of recap for our surgeons out there that may be participating and joining this, you know, even if they're not part of the IRB yet and they're listening to this podcast, and they're going to get going on in the next few weeks, we want to keep maybe an Excel sheet of patients that have either had elective cases canceled because of COVID, have been seen on telehealth or the clinic, and not been able to be scheduled for surgery because of COVID, and then vascular complications in their hospital stay of COVID patients.
Keeping a log of these patients is really important.
So I know this went through the IRBs at your local institutions. Does every institution that participates in this need to go through their local IRB? And is there any ways to expedite this?
So they do go through the local IRB. We'll have a template for them to fill out. And we have a research coordinator team that will facilitate this process. And so that's an important point. Some institutions that do a lot of research have a research coordinator and they have this process streamlined. You know, every surgeon in a big hospital, small hospital, you know, across the board, there's often a research coordinator and a way to interface with the IRB at all these places. And we will help facilitate and help you find the person you need to get enrolled so that you can start enrolling in the studies.
Is there anything else right now from an ethical standpoint that they're thinking of enrolling this patient in this registry? Is there consent required for these patients to submit this data? What's kind of that ethical framework? Is there anything else that surgeons should be thinking about right now with these patients? Because they're unfortunately going to be rolling in and we're going to be interfacing with them potentially before we maybe have all the IRB at our institutions set up.
Right. So it's completely de-identified. So it will be an exempt review. It's really important that everyone goes through the IRB and that determination is established at each institution. With the data being completely de-identified, the IRB will be an exempt status based on the criteria.
So, you know, how will each institution manage which patients and what information they keep locally at that institution, and then what information and how they submit it then into the registry, and it's tracked there as well.
So having said that, collecting all the information that we could on all those patients would be overwhelming and daunting to our vascular surgery colleagues around the world who are in the thick of it. So right now, we're encouraging our members to keep track of the patients that are affected by COVID. The elective surgery practice, I know all the patients that were scheduled for surgery and they're on my reschedule list. So I've got that. Patients with hypercoagulable phenotype or vascular complications of COVID are a case series that I'm holding on to, and the patients of interest. And the data will be entered in the REDCap survey. Everything's going to be de-identified. So each institution's going to get a tracking number. Even the institution, it's going to be de-identified. We're not going to put in the surgery date. It's going to be, you know, day zero. So post-op day four would not be April 4th. It would be, like I said, post-op day four. So everything is de-identified.
So for institutions that are wanting to participate, they listen to this podcast, where can they get information?
They can email either of us. So robert.cuff@spectrumhealth.org or max.woolauer@cuanschutz.edu. You have our emails.
And do you have any advice on encouraging participation in this study and their partners and others?
Here's what's really the silver lining of the COVID pandemic for vascular surgeons. With the physical distancing, I like to call it physical distancing, not social distancing, we've learned how interconnected we are. So we're physically distant, and that established a need for us to interconnect and interface. This is the first pandemic to occur in the era of social media. And for us to learn how close we are and how much we have in common across the world, it's taken this pandemic. And now that we realize how interconnected we are, we're also learning how powerful it'll be for us to pool resources and share our data and share our knowledge to answer important questions. And so the first one that we're answering are the effects of COVID-19 on patients with vascular disease. And moving forward, really the sky is the limit. The larger our collaborative, the better equipped we'll be to answer questions. You know, one question that's eluded vascular surgeons for years is, what is the patency of an SFA stent? The questions that we can answer across the board are really endless and would come from the members of the collaborative individually. They would submit a research proposal, and it would go through our peer review and then become a study. So there's no question, I think, too big or too small that we could answer. The questions that we're going to be asking are going to go through a steering committee. And there are some guidelines that we're going to set up. It's important that it's clear and that we're transparent that the collaborative is fair and inclusive. We have a diverse membership. We have trainees. We have integrated residents and fellows. We have leaders of large academic institutions, and we have private practitioners who may be in solo practice. And everybody has a voice, and everybody is important. We want one or two investigators per study, and we want three aims or primary outcomes. When we're designing our REDCap surveys, we want no more than 20 minutes maximum to collect data on each patient. And that's really important. If we're trying to collect all the information we can on every patient, then it gets overwhelming. And after 20 minutes, the quality of the data entry starts to deteriorate. So some of the guidelines that we're going to lay out that are really important are, one, that we have a collaborative authorship model. Every surgeon that participates and provides a patient into our registry will be a co-author on the paper. And then we'll assign based on who does the most work, who does the heavy lifting, so to speak, will typically be assigned the first and last author. The way that this usually works is the senior author is a surgeon kind of spearheading the initiative. And the first author, we would like to have a trainee. We feel that elevating and empowering trainees is a crucial part of our collaborative. The more buy-in we have from vascular surgeons, the more participation we have from vascular surgeons around the world, the better equipped we'll be, the better the data will be. It's an act of solidarity. It's an act that it reminds us how we're in this together. So simply acknowledging that we're in this together and we're going to get through this together, and participating in the collaborative, submitting a patient, and getting your name on a paper together. These are all ways that we can acknowledge each other. This will show the power of vascular surgeons around the world. So a lot of us are on the front lines, and Adam and Kevin, you guys are in the thick of it, and Rob is in the thick of it, and in Colorado, we're surging here. There are other people that are on different parts of the curve. Other vascular surgeons are on different parts of the curve. And we all want to get involved, and we all feel this interconnectedness. And simply the act of doing something, this bias towards action, that I'm going to put the patients, I'm going to call them, you know, once a week and check in with them, make sure they're doing okay, that they haven't progressed to an emergency, that I need to add them on right away. I'm going to see how they're doing. I'm going to keep track of them. So this idea of a collaborative is really, I'm going to make a commitment to the patients whose surgeries were postponed, and I'm going to keep track of them.
I would also add that systemically across, at least in the United States, all hospitals and systems kind of jumped to figure out how we are going to manage these, and systematically having to cancel cases in preparation. We were fortunate enough that Dr. Forbes in Toronto had worked out the VASCON scale to give us some guidance, and that was based on kind of expert level advice. And this will potentially allow us to look at how that worked out across the, at least the United States and worldwide, for places that are using VASCON to kind of gauge the cases they are doing at a particular time, but also help us refine it in case we were ever to face another large mass event, whether it's another pandemic or something, to give vascular surgeons an idea of what patients can safely be postponed. Maybe there are some that we have in certain VASCON categories that need to be shifted because their outcomes aren't as good. And this will give us data to actually look into that and to make hopefully better recommendations so that we're more prepared if this ever comes up again.
Right. We have the SVS guidelines too. But, you know, simply just think about the aneurysm size as a marker for, you know, performing the operation urgently versus deferring it, you know, 4 to 12 weeks. So is the aneurysm size 6.5 centimeters? Is it 8 centimeters? I mean, that in and of itself is a study. Asymptomatic carotid stenosis, those patients that are being postponed, is potentially a study. So, you know, we started this collaborative, you know, we're a very young organization. We started this with the onset of the COVID pandemic hitting us here in the US. And so I'd also like to have an open invitation for everyone in our collaborative to be part of building this organization from the bottom up. I think it's an exciting opportunity.